Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
What is ours in America, what we've earned, and what it deserves us. We have basically put into this country, and we deserve to get back what we've put into it.
This little rat, a 25-year-old idiot who did nothing in his life, what we've put into the country, you. See, if we had a government, which we don't, we have gangsters running every level of government, by and large, to the 99th percentile. The 99% of politicians are nothing but... how many different words do I have to describe the same thing? Graft, corruption, lobbyist. It's all one and the same. And so that this permits a vacuum to form, and in the vacuum, the rats come out. Now, the rats are being organized by the unions, which is being organized by Axelrod of the presidency, which was funded originally and orchestrated by the Soros money. It's all been traced. It's all been documented. Now, the media, what role does the media have in all of this? Here is a report of what happened in Oakland last night from a local newspaper, and I'm not making up one word. This comes from the Oakland, from Time magazine. And listen to how they're glorifying the shutting down of the fourth largest maritime port in America, how they're glorifying burning and looting and attacking police. This is Time magazine, a long, long, long history of Stalinism in Time magazine. Their headline is, How Occupy Oakland is Stealing Occupy Wall Street's Mojo. I'm going to read it to you. As promised, the Occupy Oakland movement on Wednesday spilled from its home base in front of City Hall, halting street traffic and blocking access to banks and businesses that defied its calls for general strike. The mood, for the most part, was festive, full of homegrown pride for a hard-luck city enjoying a rare moment in the global spotlight. Concerts and prayer sessions, free barbecue and ice cream were among the offerings to a motley mix of protesters. Cannabis smoke was widespread, and of course there were a lot of speeches. In the main amphitheater, on top of trucks in the middle of the street, the day of mass action culminated with a shutdown of the port of Oakland, where as many as 7,000 people gathered peacefully to stop trucks in their tracks, before things took a violent turn overnight for the second week in a row. I'm not going to read the rest of it because they're lying when they say it was a group of anarchists. It was not anarchists. It was the occupiers, per se. In fact, I will go to Oakland developer Phil Tagami, who used a shotgun to scare off these vermin. Developer with shotguns scared off Oakland rioters. It took a Japanese-American named Phil Tagami, who came out with a shotgun and scared them away from rioting and destroying his downtown building. He owned a big building called the Landmark Rotunda Building on Frank Ogawa Plaza outside City Hall. He helped redevelop it. And he said, we had people who were attempting to break into our building. Tagami said. He grabbed a shotgun that he usually keeps at home, went down to the ground floor and discouraged them, he said. No police were in sight. He said, basically, people were pushing to get through the door. I was standing there and they just saw me there and I lifted it. I didn't point it. I just held it in my hands and I just racked it and they ran. Although they didn't get inside the building, Tagami, age 46, oversaw its $50 million renovation and has an office there. Vandals did scrawl graffiti on the outside walls during the post-midnight riot. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the reason this is happening is because the governor of the state of California is a lifetime socialist, a lifetime radical. Moonbeam Brown should have called out the National Guard and stopped these vermin. Instead, they're winking and nodding at them. The mayor of Oakland should have been arrested for encouraging this. The newspapers have thrown gasoline on the fire by glorifying these rats. And who do you think is the biggest victim here? The police. The police are being sent in and being told not to stop them. Then they're being told to do stop them. Then they're being told, don't stop them too hard. Then they're being told, do stop them too hard. What would you do if you were a cop? I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have called out the National Guard if I were the governor of the state of California. I would have arrested every single one of them. I would have disbarred any lawyer who was engaged in this riot. I would have said, you've thrown away your law license. You're not an officer of the law. You're a piece of garbage. Your law license, I'll rip it up and throw it out of the street. That's all. Take your law license and wipe you know what with it. What kind of government is this that encourages this kind of behavior? And the answer is we have no government. We have government anarchy. And there's a reason for it. Why do you suppose there are riots in the streets of America right now? Do you think they're spontaneous? They were organized. The Congressional Black Caucus started the attack in August by ripping apart the Tea Party. Then came the union thug who came out and said that you should take out the Tea Party. Then they unleashed these mobs of anarchists and communists and disenfranchised morons who can't get a job, and we know why they can't get a job. They're unemployable. They have no skills. And so now we see the first phase of the Marxist Revolution in the United States of America. And, of course, there is a reason that it's happening under Barack Obama. That's because the number of scandals in his administration has reached a critical mass, one scandal after another, one corrupt billion-dollar deal after another, $900 million missing here, $1.2 billion given there. Pelosi's brother-in-law gets a $900 million deal. No one says a word. So what do? They unleash the mobs to throw smoke in your eyes so you don't really see what's going on. It's all part of the corruption. And if you want to talk about it, you can then throw into the mix why they're attacking Herman Cain again. I don't want to do it again. We know why. Because he's a threat to the Republican establishment and the Democrat establishment. He's just liable to do what America wants, which is clean up the mess and cut out the corruption. So last night, the rabble in the streets shut down the port of Oakland, the fifth largest cargo port in the United States of America. They destroyed stores, smashed ATMs, and the police were forced to use tear gas. Do you believe this is the start of a violent revolution in America? Do you? Are you a supporter of violence in the Occupied Wall Street movement? And how do you claim to justify your actions? I'll go into that later on because it's a very important topic. In New York City, the Occupy Wall Streeters have been investigated by a newspaper. And it turns out that according to New York City arrest records, many Occupy Wall Street protesters live in luxury. For each of the 984 Occupy Wall Street protesters arrested in New York City, you hear this? They looked at their home addresses. And they had a median value of over $500,000. Most of them were white. Most of them lived in very, very good surroundings. Most of them are just spoiled brats who have nothing to do. All they want to do is get stoned and break things. Where is the leadership? Why is there no National Guard? If we had a governor in the state of California who was a real governor, he would have governed by calling out the National Guard. If we had a governor worth anything, he would have overridden the useless mayor that you have in New York City, and he would have called out the National Guard. But we don't have leadership. We have lobbyists, and we have party animals. 1-800-449-8255. Also, I want to talk about something that has nothing to do with this. I don't know if it does. I had a very, very clear dream last night, and I don't know if any of you in the audience will relate to it, but I often tell of my dreams on this show, and here it is. A young black lady who is married and has two children is burdened by the care of her two children. She's afraid that every time she turns her back, one of the kids would run off somewhere and get hurt. Her husband was watching the kids in another part of this dream. And I said to him, you've got to watch them like a hawk because in the blink of an eye, your children can run away and they're liable to get hurt. And the black man said to me, I know, it's 24/7. The young lady, the wife, was outside on a balcony looking towards Diamond Head in Hawaii. I know it was Hawaii in the dream because I remember looking at Diamond Head with her and beyond Diamond Head. And the mountains were in very sharp relief. Only in Hawaii have I seen anything like that, the way mountains look when they're in very sharp relief with shadow. So I'm standing there with this black lady, and we're looking at the mountain, as I said to you. And she is sad. And she looks at me, and she started to say something, and I said, you don't have to finish your sentence. I said to her, I know what you're saying. You're saying you took a wrong turn in your life, and look where you are. Life takes a turn, and you're not where you wanted to be. And the woman was near tears in my dream. And I looked at her, and I said, but you don't understand something. You're just where you're supposed to be. and her eyes lit up. And I said, so what? You made a turn and that's where you're supposed to be, because that's where you are. And her friend, another black lady, looked at me and smiled, and I said, and said to me, I guess that's Zen. And I said to her, don't you understand? Don't you get it? You made a turn in your life, and you don't think that's where you're supposed to be. But that's where you are, which means that's where you're supposed to be. And the woman started to smile, and she felt liberated. And I said to her, look, 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 what do you see? And she looked up at Diamond Head, and she said, I see the snow-capped mountain behind it. And I said, that's the big island beyond. She said, I can see the snow caps of the mountains of Kilauea. I said, right. And then just before our eyes, the snow-capped mountain disappeared in 1 second because the earth rotated in that 1 second, and the vision disappeared. And the woman looked at me, and she felt liberated, realizing she was where she was supposed to be. And then the woman said to me, Michael, I need to go inside and eat because I'm very hungry now. She said, please come inside and tell me how to eat so I can feel better. Apparently, she was suffering from some disease that she just overcame. I believe that it was a cancer that was in remission. And I said to her, I don't need to tell you how to eat. Just go in and eat with an appetite, a full appetite. Eat whatever you want because your appetite is back. Then I woke up and the sun was rising in my bedroom. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we're living through the most corrupt administration in American history, where one Democrat after another is caught in a scandal. And it is not coincidental that there are riots in the streets of the major cities of America. It is orchestrated to throw your mind away from Obama, away from Rahm Emanuel, away from Nancy Pelosi, away from John Corzine. You think it's happening by itself. You're mistaken. It's all orchestrated in order to divert your attention. Apparently, even Nancy Pelosi came under fire during a C-SPAN weekly briefing, which she never expected. And we'll play that for you in a bit. You're not going to believe this one. But even 60 Minutes, the far left, useless 60 Minutes, is questioning Nancy Pelosi about her stock deals back in 2008. They haven't yet caught up with the $900 million in the solar deal yet to the brother-in-law. But now they're working on something that wonderful Nancy Pelosi did in 2008. And, of course, Americans are starting to see that even the media is waking out of a slumber of some kind. I doubt that they'll get anywhere because they'll only go so far with it. If you want to talk about that or my dream, if you wish to do that, the phone number, you know what it is. Paula in Sacramento, welcome to the program.
Hi. I listened to what you said about your dream from last night, and it touched me so much because I have made some decisions and taken some turns in the last few years where I've questioned myself, but I realized that what you said is correct. I had to do that. I'm where I am because I'm supposed to be here, and that just kind of solidified, you know.
Yes. See, my dream was a message to myself as well as to my listeners. The black lady who I was speaking with was my anima. This requires a great deal of self-analysis over many years, but I'm deeply in touch with my own subconscious, and I'm pretty sure I know what it is. You know that in dreams, all the players are yourself, right?
Right.
Okay, so for me to be the strong figure talking to her and saying you are where you are, and that's where you're supposed to be, is my way of saying to my inner complainer, who says that she took a wrong turn, don't be complaining anymore because you are where you're supposed to be.
Right.
So in other words, I'm trying to unify my own self through my own dream.
And whether that place where we are is good or bad or people agree with it or not, it's where we are supposed to be for whatever reason.
That's exactly the meaning of the message.
Yeah, and I got
because,
it.
But what is the meaning of the symbolism of the snow-top mountain that we saw for one instant and it disappeared?
You know, I live in the shadow of Mount Shasta up here in Redding, California, and so I don't know. To me, the mountain symbolizes strength and continuity. And
right, and a snow-capped mountain, in my estimation, symbolizes purity, a distant vision of purity that we glimpse, that all of us have a glimpse of every once in a while,
yeah.
And we try to achieve that purity in our thinking, and rarely can we achieve it for much longer than an instant. But nevertheless, it's always there. The mountain is always there. It's like saying God is always there. It's just that you got to keep looking for it. And God doesn't appear 24/7 to the most religious man on earth. God is only there for the occasional glimpse. Some of us never see him, but he doesn't go away. But if you keep looking for God, he is there. He will appear.
And I'll
so, I mean, I'm just glad. Look, it's very unusual to share a dream on a national talk radio show. I wouldn't have dared it unless I had done it before many times with some of my other dreams that I thought were profound. There was one other element to the dream I have to mention. As I was standing on the railing with this lady, I had dropped my pocket watch. I carry a little pocket watch with me for virtually my entire life. It's a little leather-wrapped Swiss Army knife, pocket watch, the type of that you would have seen in an old-time railroad guy had years ago. I've always carried it in my pocket. And it was on the ground. It had fallen on the grass. And I kept looking at it as I was speaking with her, and I said, I've got to retrieve that watch. Now, of course, what comes to mind is that time is ticking away, and it's time to get your act together. That's one way to look at it. Another way is, I mean, who took a watch? Which painter took a watch and distorted the watch and distorted a picture of time better than anybody in the history of painting? Salvador Dali, right? So that's an interesting concept that it appears in my dream as well. Now, why is this dream coming up at this time of social upheaval in the United States of America, at a time when we have the equivalent of a banana republic corruption in the United States of America? This is an important question. It is deeply disturbing to me to see my country unraveling because of the false one in the White House. And that is why it's coming up. Now, I want to compare for you in the seconds that remain the difference between the Tea Parties and the vermin in the Occupy Wall Street movement. I'll start with the Tea Party. God, guns, American oil, strong defense, spending control, no illegal immigration, small government, less taxes, less abortion. That's a beginning. The vermin in the gutters, state is God, no oil, no military, more government spending, violence against Jews and bankers. Shall I go on?
Savage.
one 800 449 8255. So before the break, I told you of a dream. I told you of the difference in my opinion between the Tea Party. By the way, how many police were necessary for all of the Tea Party organizations that have ever held rallies? Answer, zero. No police required. How many police are required for the vermin in the gutters of New York, Oakland, and elsewhere? Not enough. We need the National Guard. They should all be arrested. They should be put into 60 to 90 days detention. Any lawyers amongst them should have them their licenses to practice law revoked. The Tea Party, in a nutshell, is for God, guns, American oil, a strong defense, control of spending, no illegal immigration, less government, less taxes, less abortion. And what do the vermin in the gutters of New York and Oakland and elsewhere stand for? Well, damaging the businesses around them. The state should be God. No use of oil. No military. No police. More government spending. More illegal immigration. Bigger government. More taxes. More abortion. Violence against bankers and Jews. Violence against business owners and Republicans. What else do they want? What have you seen? A shocked and disgusted American public sees the truth. We see these rats defecating on police cars and in their tent cities. We see them smoking dope and selling drugs. We see complaints of public masturbation and sexual assault. We see rats fighting with the police. We see rats trashing everything that they touch with their dirty hands. We see rats walking around naked. We see rats having sex publicly. We see rats pimping and prostituting underage children. We see the lying rats investing their donations in a bank while attacking banks. We see the brainwashed rats repeating what they are told in the organized rituals. We see them spitting on the American flag. We see them getting the support of Iran, North Korea, David Duke, and the Nazi and Communist parties. We see these bums not working. We see them lying and cheating and stealing and using marijuana and laying around and screaming that the society is not good. That's the Occupy movement in a nutshell. How many cops were necessary for the Tea Party movements, meetings? None. How many cops were required for the organized Wall Street and other such meetings? Not enough. New York City, WOR, Steve, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hi, Doc. I just wanted to tell you the purpose of your persecutions is actually helping you.
Okay, but go on. Finish it.
The reason why is because biblical reasons. I study the Bible. I'm 23 years old, and I study a lot daily. I'm in the Word, and Hebrew.
So what is it? What are you saying? You mean my being reviled by the media, rejected by the media, banned from entering Britain, etc., is a result of, is a sort of persecution, and you're saying that's helping me in what way?
Well, the Bible says your enemies are your footstool. So the enemies are actually giving you something to step on to take you higher. You've been taken higher in your books, your ratings. She was talking about you one day, and he said, you know, he just was making fun of you. But the more he makes fun of you, the more people make fun of you, the more it gives you actually something to step on.
I know who you're talking about. He's a very mentally ill person. He's a very sad. In addition to that, he's a talentless man, and everybody knows that. Stations are dropping him in droves because he's talentless. So he's angry at me because I have talent and he doesn't. So he hates me. I mean, there's a real visceral hatred because he's talentless. He's a product of the Rush Limbaugh clique.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't even enter my mind. Any man with a voice like that doesn't belong in talk radio, never did. He sounds sort of, that's why I joke about him. I call him I occasionally mention this character. His ratings are in the toilet. Nobody listens to him. They only listen to him because he follows the old ABC lineup. On his own, he never would have gotten anywhere. But I could care less about him. I feel very bad for him because I hear he's extremely ill and stations are dropping him because they hear him coughing and wheezing on the air and sneezing and coughing, and then they know he's not long for the radio business. Anyway, so you're saying persecution is good for a person?
Yes, look at David. David is a prime example. He just got through killing Goliath, and what happens? Saul persecuted him and chased him with a whole army of men. Then what happened? That caused it was getting him ready to be a king. All his persecutions beforehand, there's thousands of biblical incidences like Elijah and all those things. And even Jesus, he was persecuted to the nth degree, and his father exalted him to sit at his right hand.
All right, well, you could look at it that way. Thank you for the support. My dog is barking. I wish he weren't. Teddy, stop it. You'll be thrown out of the studio. Cut it out. You know that. New York, Pat, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, hi, Michael. You know, you were describing your dream, and as you were describing it, I could actually visualize it. I'm sorry for the cold. It was really vivid, and it was prophetically beautiful, because as you got towards the end of it, the woman who, as you say, obviously is you, part you in this dream, looks to the other side, sees the other mountain, and it's gone in a second. And
yes,
that's the way life is. We're here for a second. And when she says that, or you say that, you then say to her, eat what you want, which to me means nourish yourself, no matter
that's
what.
That's right. Don't look to a book on how to eat when you've come out of an illness.
Exactly.
And she lost her appetite. It was from a depression and an illness in the dream. And then she says, please come and eat with me and tell me what to eat because I'm an expert in nutrition. And I say to her, just go in and eat now that you have a full appetite. Eat whatever you want. The answer is, actually, if you want to use a biblical phrase, you're supposed to, you know, eat with vigor because life is short. If you have a good appetite, eat. That's what it says. I mean, it's the mark of health. Let's put it that way. When a person's appetite returns after an illness, it means they're getting better, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's not the time to indulge in diets. Let me tell all of you out there who've had depression, forget about your dieting when you come out of a depression. Eat whatever the heck you want for a few days. Just eat. The object is not to consult a book on what to eat. And I wrote the books. So don't think I'm throwing away all of the knowledge of nutrition. I'm just telling you, when you come out of a depression, go and eat. But there's much more to this story than just eating. You understand that.
I know, because at the point in which you drop your what? Well, in addition to that, of course, which you come out of this and you're not...
The woman says, I made a turn and I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And I say to her, and this is a black lady who has turned her back on her children, and her husband is taking care of the two children, right? She's not looking at the children. She's looking with me at the mountain. And she's sad. And she says, I took a turn in my life and I'm not where I'm supposed to be. And I said, I know what you're saying. Life takes a turn and you're not where you want to be. And then I said to her, so what? You made a turn and that's where you're supposed to be, because that's where you are. And her friend, another black lady, says, I guess that's Zen. And I said, don't you understand? Don't you get it? You made a turn in your life, and don't you think that's where you're supposed to be? Because that's where you are, which means that's where you're supposed to be. And she smiles, and she's healed. And at that moment, we see the white, snowy caps of Kilauea and beyond. And it's gone in 1 second. It disappears in a second. The vision disappears. So there's so much to it. I don't know if I want to bore my listeners with my dreams, but I have to ask myself a question, Pat. Why am I dreaming about a black couple with two children? And these were a middle class. This was a middle class black couple, at a time when Herman Cain is being crucified by the vermin in the media, at a time when the imposter has run out of America again, after setting off riots in the major cities, cavorting with Islamists at the G8 summit, kissing an Islamist on the cheek, the head of the Turkish government. Why am I dreaming of this at this time, I wonder?
I think because you're a person with a good heart and who really appreciates true American suffering and true black American suffering. And I
think it's especially the young American black middle class that has, for the first time, seen some of the sunshine of America in such large numbers. And now they see it being pulled apart by Obama, who has driven a wedge between blacks and whites and actually created enmity in order to get reelected. But make no mistake about it, the black middle class is threatened right now by Obama, more so than under any presidency imaginable.
I know.
Thank you for the call. I don't know what else to say. I don't want to beat it up, you know. Palm Beach, Florida. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Yes, what you were saying about your dream, I'm pretty tuned into some things, and that dream brought some chills up my spine. I was actually sitting here and just had chills up my spine about it. And
why? Why do you think you got chills up your spine?
Just the way you said it, the way it was presented, the way you were so, you knew everything that you said. I've never had a dream where it was so precise where you could restate everything that went through your dream.
Well, here's the thing you got to understand, John. I spent over 30 years of my life, if not more, interpreting my dreams and the dreams of my children. I trained them from the time they were very young to in the morning at breakfast to talk about their dreams. And then we would try to analyze the dreams. I guess I was overly Freudian, but that's what I did. In other words, it's based upon an awful lot of practice, right? I also have almost no barrier between my conscious and my subconscious. Again, that's a product of self-learning and self-teaching. I once had a psychologist friend call me crazy 30 years ago. He's long dead because I was so in touch with my subconscious. He was afraid of his own. He was afraid of his subconscious, and I'm not. In other words, we are what we are. And the tip of the mountain is our brain and our consciousness, right? That's the tip of our conscious thinking. It's just the tip of the iceberg. But don't most people want to know what's going on under the surface? And so, therefore, if you're afraid of yourself, you take Prozac, you engage in too many social activities, you become obsessive compulsive in business or in excessive sexuality or outlets such as that because you're trying to run away from yourself. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. You try to run. You can't run away from yourself with these false drugs they want to give us.
That's what I'm saying. And the doctors are not good at dream analysis. They don't know anything about it, most of them today. They don't study Freud. I have a friend who has high blood pressure, okay? You won't believe this. He's in the restaurant business. Nice guy. He had like 150 over 120. So the doctor put him on blood pressure medicine, right? I said, did he tell you to stop putting salt in everything? Because every time you eat with this guy, he puts salt in everything. He said, no, the doctor didn't tell me. I said, your doctor is a fool. Your doctor is a moron. How could he not tell you to stop taking in sodium and just take a pill? And this is a product of the lack of education in our medical profession today. So I don't think the psychiatrists are any better trained than are the physical doctors who don't even know there's a relationship between salt or sodium intake and then high blood pressure. So they just throw a pill at you, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm more based on natural medicine, natural thinking, natural dream interpretation, and frankly, natural political interpretation. I am giving America a natural political interpretation unlike any in the business. Anybody can give you the two-dimensional interpretation, but I give you a five-dimensional interpretation on most issues. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, we could talk about Cain. You know, there's an interesting article I just pulled up from ABC News. I'm going to do the dream interpretation in a minute. We have a psychologist on the line just to finish that up. Listen to the headline from the rotten ABC News. Herman Cain hit by tax lien in 2008. I read the article, and my headline is a little different than that of the anti-American ABC News. The headline really is Cain attacked by IRS while fighting stage 4 cancer. You got to read the article to see how low this is getting. It's getting lower than you could imagine because Cain was attacked by the IRS while he was undergoing treatment for stage 4 cancer in 2006. And he was granted a six-month extension on his federal taxes. Nevertheless, they sent a delinquency notice to him while he was fighting cancer. So it wasn't Cain's fault, but ABC News twisted it, saying Cain hit by tax lien in 08. They're all against him. Ohio, Betsy, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, you have a great deal of insight into your dreams. It's my favorite part of the show. The first woman represents your feminine side, the feminine side of your subconscious, and it's also your dark side. This is why the two women were black. This is my interpretation anyways.
Right. Well, let's slow down. That would be, in Freudian terms, the anima, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. I'm just trying to lend a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm listening to you. I understand that.
Yeah. So the second woman, the rationale for the second woman was because you needed to hear the same message repeated. And in fact, it was the exact same message, was it not, that you repeated to her?
The message I gave to the first black woman was confirmed by the second.
Exactly. So you needed to hear it twice. Now you hear it. Now, my guess is you have two children, because those two children represent your own children. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I can't go too deep into this, and only you can answer the questions, but the two children represent your feelings about how and by whom they were raised. But, you know, I'm not going to go into that right now.
Well, no, it's a reversal of the reality because the woman in my the wife raised the children more than I did. She was a fabulous mother, still is, but I was more involved in my own work and my own, you know, world, my own mind. It was a reversal. It's a reverse. I mean, very often our dreams reverse things too, you know.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. By
the way, you know who taught me that? I remember waking up in a straw hut in Fiji once after a night of drinking kava kava. And I had a terrible, terrible dream about something, an impending doom. And my Fijian friend, Domenico Korovembao, I told him what happened, and he smiled, and he said to me, "Oh, in Fiji, we believe the opposite of what your dream happens." That was how he laughed it off.
Yeah, it's very telling. In my opinion, that mountain, you know, obviously is nature. Nature is awesome. And when the earth rotates, you said in your dream the earth rotated and everything changed. Is that
well? I don't know that it rotated. All I know is we were looking at the mountain in Honolulu. It was in very sharp relief. You know how the mountains in Hawaii look at a certain time of the day when they're in deep shadow, right?
But you knew because that was you lived there, correct?
Yeah, I lived there. I lived there, Argus. But I looked through the mountain, and for one instant, we saw a snow-capped mountain very far away. And I said to the woman, "Look. Look at the snow-capped mountain." And I said, "That's Kilauea on the Big Island." And the minute she looked, it moved. It disappeared. And I said, "It disappeared because the earth just moved in the instant you looked at it."
Yeah. Not too sure about that. But here's what I do know. Even after it moved and whatever changes took place because it moved, you were still left standing with the knowledge and the wisdom that you had imparted to your own self, to your own subconscious, to within your dream. So that's what I think it means.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you, there's another element to this. I've been watching too much of this Nat Geo. Nat Geo may as well be the atheist channel. Every day they tell you another comet's going to hit. There basically is no God. It's all based upon, you know, chance and evolutionary and the dinosaurs, and we're going to die and we're not here. We are here. We're here for an instant. All of that rubbish, which is fundamentally anti-God teaching. Now, I am a man of science, but I can explain to you how you can have a concept of evolution and a concept of God at the same time. It's a whole show for another time. I think I'm watching too much of these cataclysms and the cataclysmic shows, and that we're only here for a second and the whole world's going to disappear. We're about to die. I mean, they are really stirring up fears in the average person, Nat Geo, and such.
Michael, I want to tell you something. You have the potential to be a very religious man. I tell you that as a fellow Jew. Some of the things you say are absolutely come out of Orthodox Judaism. Do you know that?
I would say they come out of something deeper than Orthodox Judaism. I would say they come out of a universalist sense, something in a transcendental sense, something that transcends a single religion.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, there you have it.
Thanks for the interpretation. Everybody wants to own me. Everybody wants me to be for them only, and I don't see it that way. I've never been comfortable in a house of worship. I love houses of worship for those who love houses of worship, and I love it. I actually am envious of those who have congregations. Unfortunately, I have never been comfortable in a congregation. It's a very personal thing for me. God exists for me alone.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's taking back what is ours in America, what we've earned, and what it deserves us. We have basically put into this country, and we deserve to get back what we've put into it.
You stupid moron, you. So last night, the streets of Oakland were taken over by these rabble, these pot-smoking degenerates, who are initiating a violent revolution in America, and they're acting as a cover for the most corrupt administration in American history, in my estimation. They're not separate from each other. They're one and the same. You have to ask yourself, why now? Why is there so much social unrest in America right now? Did it happen by itself? Of course not. It was orchestrated and funded by George Soros, as we have spelled out. The documents exist. The unions told us it was coming. And so the unions, in cahoots with the Obama administration, at a time the Obama administration is under the gun for so many scandals, financial, the gun running to Mexico, vote rigging, you name it, suddenly the violence breaks out, the protests break out so that we don't see what they're doing. And now last night in Hawaii, in Oakland, California, the rabble in the streets shut down the port of Oakland, the fifth largest cargo port in the U.S. They destroyed stores, smashed ATMs, set fires. And the police were forced to use tear gas. And so here we are in America, and we're in a very strange and very dangerous place with a vacuum of leadership. It's a vacuum of leadership because if we had a governor in the state of California, he would have called out the National Guard. We know that we have no mayor of Oakland. because she's been on the side of the protesters, then against the protesters. So she now is responsible for seeing the Port of Oakland shut down. The governor nowhere to be found because the governor was put in office with union support. So he's silent on this issue. And then I talked about a dream that I had, which I'm not going to talk about again because I think we've covered that. And we've touched on the Herman Cain issue again. The good news is that Herman Cain is way up in the polls. For the first time, he's actually beating Romney, which is good. And he's raised a lot of money as a result of these unfair attacks upon him. And we also started to talk about Representative Nancy Pelosi being ambushed by a reporter from 60 Minutes asking her about her and her husband's benefiting from a Visa stock deal while a credit card bill was running through Congress as she was Speaker. And I asked you, do you think the media is finally beginning to turn on the Democrats? Will even the most gratuitous of the so-called journalists finally turn on the corrupt ones which threaten to bring down the United States of America? I doubt it. Now let's take your calls here on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. The lines are wide open. Fred in Sacramento, welcome to the program.
Well, Dr. Savage, you constantly refer to the dope smoking vagrants, and of course we don't condone any violence whatsoever, but because Americans like Alan Zabrowski and Dr. Steve Piesnik has come forward, we now know the truth in America. We know
Sir, I don't know what you're talking about. Who did you? I don't even slow down. Nobody knows you. Nobody knows these unknown people you're mentioning. What are you referring to?
Israel did it, didn't I? It's a lie.
Oh, I see. So it's the Zionists who caused the city of Oakland to burn.
Alan Zabrowski.
Fred, you're a Jew hater. Who was it who inducted you in the Hall of Shame? Was it your mother who was a Jew hater or your father?
Injustice to this country.
Fred, who was it who made you hate Jews? Was it your father who was the Nazi or was it your mother? Did your mother take some kind of an anti-abortion pill that wrecked your brain?
Government.
And why do you hate Jews, Fred? It's because Jews are more successful than you. And why are Jews more successful than you? Because they work harder and they're smarter. And the reason you're a loser is that because you're stupid and lazy, Fred. That's all. New York, WOR, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, live long and prosper. Michael, I can tell you this is not a movement. These dirty protesters with body odor and smelly underwear, this is about the big government crowd, Michael.
I said that already. I said that it's the Obama administration and the corrupt, thuggish unions who have supported this. We know this. They're actually boasting about it. So, what, you know, I'm not arguing with you. I'm telling you we all know that it's the unions and Obama who are doing this. But you got to ask yourself, why did Obama unleash these riots on America right now? It's because the people are awakening to his corruption. Thanks for the call. I don't want to repeat myself. And for those of you who think that it's only a small group amongst these so-called protesters who are violent, let me read to you the statements of a man who defended his building in Oakland with a shotgun. His name is Phil Tagami. Unfortunately for the protesters, he's not a white male. He is apparently a Japanese-American who was defending his own building with a loaded shotgun, and the rats ran away the minute he cocked it. And listen to what he says. I've got to find you the exact statement. The mayor of Oakland, who should be arrested and thrown in prison herself for encouraging these rats, called the rioters, quote, a small and isolated group. Okay? She said it shouldn't mar the overall impact of the demonstration and the fact that people in the 99% movement demonstrated peacefully and for the most part were productive and very peaceful. Mr. Tagami, who defended his building with a shotgun, disagreed. He called the Occupy Oakland encampment, quote, basically concealment and cover for anarchists who are doing this to our city. Tagami added, we're very concerned that a group of people can be allowed to do this type of destruction to our town and to our image without any repercussions, Tagami said. They need to be held accountable. Tagami rejected assertions that the anarchists were a small minority. He said, no, you can't have it both ways. You see, in every movement, there are the peaceful ones and then there are the muscle of the anarchists. But they're all one part of the same fist. So make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. The unions did this. Obama did this. Axelrod did this. And it was organized by the Soros machine. And they're doing it because the American people have awakened finally to the massive, massive out of control corruption of the Democrat administration, especially this one. And now we turn to the most honest woman in the United States of America, a woman who cares only about the downtrodden, that's Nancy Pelosi. Here is a reporter on C-SPAN asking her about her stock deals while she was a Speaker of the House. I would like you to play 14 through 16.
I wanted to ask you why you and your husband back in March of 2008 accepted and participated in a very large IPO deal from Visa. At a time there was major legislation affecting their credit card companies making its way through the House. And did you consider that to be a conflict of interest?
I don't know what your point is of your question. Is there some point that you want to make with that?
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think it's all right for a speaker to accept a very preferential, favorable stock deal?
Well, we didn't.
At a time,
but that isn't
at
the
a
case.
Time when there's major legislation affecting that company in the House.
Well, first of all, let me say this. What we're talking about is an industry. What we're talking about is a Congress that passed more protections for credit card holders. So the issue that you're talking about, first of all, what you're contending is not true. But second of all, we are very proud of our record of what happened. So, but it's when we had a president who could sign the bill. There was no interest on the part of President Bush to sign such a bill. But the fact is, your basic premise is a false one, and it's no use our spending any more time.
You participated in the IPO.
Well, I have many investments, but I don't.
The House, and there was a bill very unfavorable to the credit card companies working.
Well, I will hold my record in terms of fighting the credit card companies as a Speaker of the House or as a member of Congress up against anyone's. We have passed the credit card holder Bill of Rights. I don't know what your point is. You like one bill better than another bill. No, this was the big, powerful bill, and in fact, we were able to achieve both once we were able to have a Democratic president. That's really all I'm going to say. It's not true, and that's that.
And what part's not true?
Yes, sir. That I would act upon an investment. Yes, sir.
It's now been 1 year.
So it's not true because she says so. And here's an unidentified reporter who is asking Pelosi why she and her husband back in 08 were part of a very large IPO deal from Visa when there was a major piece of legislation affecting credit card companies working through the House. Isn't that a conflict of interest? And Pelosi says, I don't understand your question. I don't understand the question, she says. Are you trying to make a point? This is what we're facing in America today. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So Nancy Pelosi refuses to answer Steve Croft of CBS, who asks her about the deal, the IPO deal from Visa, while she was a Speaker of the House. She says she doesn't understand the question. And she's shocked, if you actually look at the videotape, that anybody would dare ask her a question. According to a book written back in 2006 by Peter Schweitzer, author of Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Hypocrisy of Democrats, he said that Pelosi owns a restaurant chain, and she's a partner in a chain called Piatti, which has 900 employees, a non-union shop, and that her and her husband owns a large winery in the Napa Valley with 250 employees. None of them are in a union. There's a $25 million Napa Vineyards, and it's a non-union vineyard, according to this author. And so we don't know if that's still true, but it's pretty insulting to believe that that would be true. I mean, I think if you love unions so much, you'd unionize your own shops, wouldn't you? Let's listen to Steve Croft once again on the Savage Nation, because it's going to be a big story on Monday. If this runs on 60 Minutes, if it's not killed before then, this is going to be a big story next week. Let's listen to it.
I wanted to ask you why you and your husband back in March of 2008 accepted and participated in a very large IPO deal from Visa. At a time there was major legislation affecting their credit card companies making its way through the House. And did you consider that to be a conflict of interest?
I don't know what your point is of your question. Is there some point that you want to make with that?
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think it's all right for a speaker to accept a very preferential, favorable stock deal?
Well, we didn't.
At a time,
but that isn't
at
the
a
case.
Time when there's major legislation mm-hmm. affecting that company in the House.
Well, first of all, let me say this. What we're talking about is an industry. What we're talking about is a Congress that passed more protections for credit card holders. So the issue that you're talking about, first of all, what you're contending is not true. But second of all, we are very proud of our record of what happened. So it, yeah, no, but it's when we had a president who could sign the bill. There was no interest on the part of President Bush to sign such a bill. But the fact is, your basic premise is a false one, and it's no use our spending any more time.
You participated in the IPO.
Well, I have many investments, but I don't.
At the House, and there was a bill very unfavorable to the credit card companies working.
Well, I will hold my record in terms of fighting the credit card companies.
All right, let's stop right here. So finally, one reporter is standing up to the machine on 60 Minutes, apparently, if it ever gets aired. I don't know that it'll see the light of day. As you well know, the government media complex is far more integrated than you might imagine now. So we may think that 60 Minutes has just ambushed Pelosi, but I don't know whether it will run Sunday night. We don't know. But my hat's off to anyone asking questions of any of these people, because none of the other reporters have the nerve to ask anybody anything except to attack Herman Cain, a stage 4 cancer survivor, and because he's an easy target. That's all. So there are, I mean, even only you got one honest reporter in the mainstream media. That's a big step, you know. Let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Mike in Boston on WRKO. You're up on the program. What's on your mind,
Mr. Savage? You speak truth 5 nights a week, and the only hope we have as young reporters look to you as a guideline to truth. You do it every night, and if the young reporters can emulate your honesty and your truthfulness, America might have a chance. I thank you very much, Mr. Savage, for taking my call.
That's very beautiful. I heard what he said very carefully. You know, some of what he said I actually have thought about, which is, why do I stick my neck out like this and put myself in at such risk when I don't have to do it? I mean, I could just sit here and tell you stories and talk about making meatballs, and the audience would be there anyway, okay? And the issue is, I pray to God that some of the young reporters who are brainwashed and drugged and have been lied to at the Columbia School of Journalism and the other sad, sad institutions of brainwashing and these fake societies of professional journalists, that amongst them there'll be one honest man or woman who does like Steve Croft just did and start to stand up to this corrupt evil administration. That's all I can say. There's nothing else to say. Maybe they will save America like the man just said. Maybe they'll be the turning point. Who can say? What do you want me to talk about? I can read you a little bit from Abuse of Power. I have only a minute and 27 cents. 1:27 now. My beautiful, beautiful book. Let's see. Oh, Oakland Police. Here we are, page 131. Jack had contacted the Oakland Police about the phone call from Copeland this morning, but their interest in his story was minimal, bordering on non-existent, and Jack doubted there would ever be a follow-up. The only ones making any real noise about the whole bombing thing were the talk radio hosts and their listeners. Many of them were convinced that there was a cover-up afoot, and Jack certainly couldn't disagree. But all they had were theories, from a mob hit to an SEC investigation conspiracy, and Jack knew the truth. The way Jack saw it, I'm reading from Abuse of Power, those smoke bombs had been used as a distraction while Copeland was kidnapped from his home. He'd been drugged and interrogated and somehow managed to escape before he was found again and promptly eliminated. Now three people were dead, and Jack was convinced it was all because of the message Copeland had left for him in Caroline Cassidy's autobiography, all because of Operation Roadshow. Again, that's all I'm going to read for you right now from Abuse of Power, a fabulous mystery for those of you who read such things. Winter is coming. It's a very good time to read a novel that's so... It's a thriller. It's called a thriller. But it's also a mystery. It's a mystery, it's a thriller, but it's very political. It's a political novel written by Michael Savage, Abuse O Power.
Savage.
So now even the Atlanta Journal-Constitution has picked up on Steve Croft of CBS 60 Minutes, pressing Pelosi about some of her investments while she was Speaker. And they say that Steve Croft is not a regular in the Capitol, so his presence and his questions merit some attention. And he's asking, has a major news organization finally investigated the financial investments of House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi? It sure seemed that way. At Thursday's regular news briefing on Capitol Hill, says the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I would be quite surprised myself if the story is not killed before Sunday night, frankly. North Carolina, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, I would like to take an opportunity to analyze your dream when it comes to the mountain reference.
Please.
You made a comment that you were really in deep in touch with your subconscious. And I think, and I hear through your voice, sir, that you're very passionate about this country. I know you come from a very hardworking, established background. Also, I would assume that's why you carried a pocket watch around with you to remind you of your father and your father's hard work during his deep, deep times. Mm. But the mountain reference, I think your subconscious was trying to give you a sense of peace during that turmoil.
Why do you think the mountain represents inner peace?
Well, you made reference earlier to the mountain just showing up at a brief moment and then disappearing, you know, and the mountain and the snow top, just a cool environment. You're a very detailed individual. And, of course, the lady made reference to the mountain representing strength, and I would agree with that.
Are you in the mental professions?
No, I'm not. I'm a very detailed person, and I just listen to conversations.
I hear you. No, okay, well, thank you. I express my dreams once in a while, and when they're this vivid, and I wrote it down the minute I woke up, I actually dictated it into a line I have here for the radio show because I said I'm never going to remember the details. What struck me as most amazing about that dream, about the black lady and the children and the mountain and the watch and the snow and the this, was the sharp relief of the mountains. I know it was in Hawaii. I know that for sure because it was definitely Diamond Head. And then looking beyond Diamond Head, it was Kilauea. And when I said to her, yes, don't you get it? You made a turn in your life, and don't you think that's where you're supposed to be? That's where you are. And that means that's where you're supposed to be. I guess what I'm saying to myself, to everyone listening to the show, at a certain point in our lives, we look back. You could be 20 years old and say, I made a mistake. You could be 15. And say, gee, I made a wrong turn with picking somebody as a girlfriend or a boyfriend, right? Or you pick a course of study, let's say, in college, and then you come out and you can't get a job and you say, did I make a wrong turn? I would say, no, you didn't make a wrong turn. You went where you're supposed to go. We say, well, wait, but I don't have a job. So what? What does that mean? I mean, so you look for another job or you'll reinvent yourself and find out what you're really supposed to do. None of us are clairvoyant. We're not given a guidebook when we're born as to who we are and every step of the way spelled out for us. What kind of life would that be? See, this is a problem with a lot of the jerks in the streets of America screaming against America that it didn't give them something. There's a story that's very interesting about one of these schmucks. He was a school teacher, but he really loved puppetry. So the putz left a good teaching job and got a master's degree in puppetry and then comes back to the school and wants to teach puppetry, and the school says, we don't have the money for it anymore. And now he's out in the streets rioting because there's no one giving him a job to teach puppetry at a time like this. What more do I need to tell you about these fools than that? Now, I can tell you that it was a point in my life that I was a much bigger idealist than I am today, and I studied obscure fields, and I expected the world to give me a job for it. After all, it was my union card. I remember my first master's degree was in a certain field, and I said, wow, that's a great degree, and I'm entitled to a job. Why was I entitled to a job when there were none, especially when they were giving them only to women and minorities and illegal immigrants? So I went and got another master's degree, and I published a dissertation because it was such a good one, a real one. And again, they wouldn't give me a job because nobody was hiring anyone in that field. So I went and got a PhD, and I said, well, now they'll have to give me a job because every professor said to me it's a union card, and once you get the union card, you're going to get a teaching job. Well, they didn't give me the teaching job even with the PhD. And I had two children. Now, I could have gone off the rails. I tried everything in the world. I almost moved overseas to find a teaching job. I almost moved to Israel. And did I ever tell you that story? The top professor at Hebrew University said you're doing some of the most interesting research in your field. I will give you a teaching fellowship to the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, but I will only give it to you for 2 years, and then you're going to have to leave the country. And I said to him, well, wait a minute, what do you mean leave the country? I'm going to move my whole family there for 2 years, and then I have to leave? He said, yes. I said, why? He said, because you're such a type of person that will cause a revolution in Israel if I let you move here and stay here. You won't have a job after 2 years, and you'll join the crowds that will cause unrest in Israel. I swear to God that conversation took place. Did I also tell you about the evil professor I had at the University of California at Berkeley? That after I got my PhD, do you know what job he offered me? I had two young children. One child was two and the other child was eight. Do you know what job he offered me? None. I'll tell you what he offered me, though. He said, I will send you and your young family to a wonderful position for the Agency of International Development in guess which country? Yemen. That's right. He was ready to send me to the south of the Arabian Peninsula with a young American family to work in Yemen for the Agency for International Development. Well, I didn't take it. It would have been a nice job. It would have paid well. It was in my field, but we probably would have been kidnapped and killed. That gives you some idea of the kind of professors that I had at the University of California at Berkeley. The only people they hired were people that they can manipulate and control so they can come back and take teaching jobs themselves as retired full professors collecting full pensions and then going back as temporary employees at full salary again. That's why the universities are dying in America. Look, everything is corrupt. When a society starts to become corrupt, there's virtually nothing in society that isn't touched by it. It's the arts, it's the entertainment, it's the science, you name it. Doesn't mean everyone's corrupt, doesn't mean every field is corrupt. I think about this lie about the 99% and the 1%, and I'm reminded of the surgeon. How many of you understand what it takes to be a top surgeon in America? An orthopedic surgeon, a neurosurgeon, a vascular surgeon. Do you have any idea what it takes in education, in training, in sacrifice, in financial investment and skill to become a surgeon of any level? Well, they're amongst the 1%. And what should they do now? Give back everything that they put into the society that they've sacrificed for because the rabble in the gutters want them to give it up? Well, let me tell you something. That's what was done in communist China under Mao Zedong. What you are witnessing and the rhetoric you're hearing from these fools is exactly the rhetoric of the Red Brigades, exactly the rhetoric of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, which led to a mountain of skulls. If you people do not know your history, you're condemned to repeat it. And God forbid if we are condemned to repeat the history of Mao Zedong's China, where 60 million Chinese people were killed by his communism, or the communism of Pol Pot of Cambodia, which started again with so-called well-meaning, polite, middle-class Marxists who were rioting against the bourgeoisie. It led to a mountain of skulls where 3 million Cambodians were killed. The very same rhetoric was used by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, who said that the small 1% had no right to dominate the society. You have to understand the danger you're in. It's why I'm having such profound and such clairvoyant dreams right now. It's because I, of all people in the media right now, I'm acting like Paul Revere once again. I am telling you that unless these movements are stopped, they will spread like a cancer and they could bring down this country and lead to the death of millions of Americans. Make no mistake about it. This is not a joke that you are witnessing. This is a carefully orchestrated plan by the New World Order, George Soros's money, Barack Hussein Obama and Axelrod's organization, the union muscle, and the stupid, useful idiots, the white children who have degrees that nobody wants, of no use whatsoever to society, a toxic brew that could lead to the downfall of America and all of us will suffer. Make no mistake about it. If we had a government, this wouldn't be happening. In California, if we had a governor, the National Guard would have been called out to shut down the fourth largest port in the United States of America, or is it the fifth largest port, and not a peep out of Governor Moonbeam? How is that possible? Because it covers for them. Don't you understand what's going on? The longer you look at these rats in the streets, the less you look at what they're doing and raping and stealing from us. Don't you understand this? But let me get back to this rhetoric again about the 1% and the 99%. Of course, there's always going to be a 1% of those who have achieved more than everybody else. That's because they've worked harder or they were luckier. Now, for those who game the system, they should be put in jail. Don't think I'm going to sit here and support gangsters like those on Wall Street who have robbed the country blind. I've been saying for years, I wrote Trickle Up Poverty, naming names. Nothing's happened to them. Half of them came from Goldman Sachs and then became Treasury Secretaries. I mean, don't tell me I don't know what went on. I do know what went on. And the reason they're getting away with it is because they own the government. They run the government. So if you're going to direct your anger, direct it at those who ripped the system off and bankrupted America and brought about the last housing bubble and a housing crisis. They're now engaged in the same exact scene all over again. Take a look at IMF. Take a look at John Corzine's company. $900 million is missing. He mixed up investment funds with company funds. That's a punishable offense. If a company knowingly mixes investment funds with the funds of the company, they go to jail for it. Notice that the SEC did nothing so far. There is no SEC involvement. The only group investigating John Corzine's bankruptcy is a trade organization created by a former member of Goldman Sachs, one of his friends. So don't think I don't know what's going on. I do. But if you let this rhetoric and these rats in the streets get out of control, there's liable to be massive murder in this country. I don't know how many different ways I have to tell you the same thing. The very same rhetoric occurred in communist China and then in Cambodia under Pol Pot. And don't forget that Pol Pot was a mild-mannered professor in Cambodia who became infatuated with Karl Marx when he read Das Kapital. And he went to Paris to study Marxism. And he came back and he instituted what he thought was a fair and just society. Eventually, he unleashed 13- and 14-year-old Cambodians with red scarves to mark them. They were known as the Khmer Rouge, who rounded up anybody with a pair of eyeglasses as the middle class. And they killed doctors, lawyers, accountants, teachers, police chiefs. Anybody who was educated was executed after being worked nearly to death in Cambodia as a result of the very same rhetoric that you're hearing coming out of this Occupy movement. And so again, ask yourself, I'm taking an example, a neurosurgeon, a man who or a woman who spent, 15, 20 years becoming a skilled neurosurgeon is not entitled to live better than a bum who studied puppetry? Think about it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So I've given you a bit of history. Remember what Santayana wrote. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And if you don't understand that a very dangerous result could emanate from these so-called peace-loving protesters, then you don't know your history. And I've given you a thumbnail sketch of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia and Mao Zedong. Of course, there are many differences. And the differences will probably save us. For example, there is no single charismatic leader unless you consider Obama the leader of these protest movements, which I think he is. That's number one. Number two, there's no massive starvation in the United States of America right now, thanks to the corporations that provide us with agricultural products and transportation and distribution and sales. Were it not for the finest system in the whole world in terms of production, etc., you'd have starvation in America. If you left it to these jerks in the streets, we'd all be eating garbage. Not one of them knows how to grow so much as a vegetable, I can guarantee it. I have a friend who owns a restaurant. He also raises olives and he raises grapes. Lorenzo of North Beach Restaurant, he has a vineyard in Sonoma. I was there when he planted his grapes 12, 15 years ago. So he told me that 50% or so or even more of his grapes were wiped out this year. The crop died because there were a lot of heavy rains in May. And that 30% or so of his olives were destroyed because of a drought at a certain point. Now, who do you think he went to when this happened? Did he go crying to the state? Did he ask the government to bail him out? No, he just took a loss. Ask these jerks in their tents if they can grow so much as a cabbage or a tomato, or a wheat from the bread that they're eating. They don't know how to do anything. They're useless members of society. In other words, they're parasites. It's the parasitic class. They are actually the 1% of parasites in a hardworking society. As usual, they're lying all over again. 1-800-449-8255 is the Savage Nation, michaelsavage.com. Sacramento, Jesse, you're on the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Savage, my boy Mike in the Nation. Yeah, I'm untangled what your dream means, Mike. It's your blood pressure and your nerves are redlining, my man. And you need to get
I need a vacation in Hawaii. I need a vacation in Hawaii with a black lady. Is that it?
That not. I'm the caller that's calling you to tell you you need this vacation. That's what it translates to. You need to get your butt on the beach and order a Mai Tai the size of a vacuum.
I love it. Oh, you're funny, Jesse. That's a funny call. I actually have been thinking about going to Hawaii. I love Hawaii, but it's a little late in the year for Hawaii. It's great. Hawaii is great in September, October. Now the rainy season starts, so it's not the best time of year to go to Hawaii, by the way.
I still think, you know, with the occupiers, you know, in the torrential downpour, they're going to get their granola waterlogged once it rains. They're gonna go home.
Yes, the snow. God answered our prayers by snowing on their parade. And now God answered our prayers to a certain extent by raining on their parade in Oakland. But I think they have the best of camping equipment donated, no doubt, by the foolish companies that think that they're on their side. You're funny, Jesse. You're a funny guy. You sound like a skateboarder.
No, I ain't no skateboarder. Last thing I got to say, Mike, is they need to save their granola for the energy next time they protest a murderer being put to death on the death penalty, man. They need
That's true. That's right. What if in the midst of all of this, San Quentin executed everybody on death row? That would be the smart thing to do. Is in the midst of all of this, when the radicals are in the gutters of Oakland, this would be a time to execute everybody on death row who's been there over 20 years.
Yeah, and put them all out. You know, you need to go to the beach, listen to some Glenn Miller, some Weekend Man 1, Bud Freeman, Ben Pollock, Benny Goodman, everybody, man. You need to get your butt away, Mike.
All right, Jesse, thanks for the advice. I'm sending you a free book, a free copy of Abuse of Power. You brought me you brought a smile to my lips today. Thank you very much. Albany, New York. Let's go to the other coast. Mark, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
It's a great honor to talk to you, Dr. Savage. As far as your dream, the peak that you see is you thought you've reached your peak, and the feminine side is telling you her hunger is for knowledge. And as you're trying to spread knowledge, you need more knowledge to see your peak again.
Interesting. I have thought for a while, 2 weeks ago, I was investigating getting another master's degree, a third one in neurology, believe it or not. I'm very interested in neurology. So I spent a few hours on the website of programs and such, but I think I'm so past going back to school, I don't think I could do it.
Well, school is not the only way to gain knowledge.
No, I know that the Internet's a miracle. Truthfully, I can read all of the journals in any field of science, or most of them on the Internet, and just pay a little bit and get the actual downloads or PDFs of any scientific article I want. So what am I going to get in a university today that I can't get off the Internet? Almost nothing.
General gives you more knowledge than school will.
No, I'm saying if I want to study a field such as neurology, I can learn most of that through the Internet. And since I'm not training to be a neuroscientist or such, I don't really need to go to university again. I mean, I have 3 higher degrees. Thank you very much. Knowledge is power. There's no question about it. And I would just like to study science again as it comes down to it. I think that politics is repetitive and cyclical, and we're going in circles, and America's now living through a mild Marxist revolution under the first Marxist presidency. The problem is the media will not describe it as such for 2 reasons. 1, because they don't really know it, and 2, because they're covering for the first Marxist president because they're sympathetic to it, just as many people are sympathetic to the hardcore Marxist fire bombers in the streets.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, there's a lot of big news out there. The best news that I can direct you to is on michaelsavage.com, the top right. Why do I say it? Well, one, it's my website. Two, we collected all of the best pictures of the vermin in the streets of Oakland and what they're actually doing as opposed to what you're not being told they actually did. Now we read another headline story that 60 Minutes is apparently ambushing Nancy Pelosi in an interview on her conflict of interest while speaker and facilitating financial reform while being involved with credit card companies. That's old news. I mean, they ought to catch up to today. I think it's a puff piece. I think it's a lie. It's a total lie. The fact of the matter is it's Nancy Pelosi's radical politics that have kept her elected in the sickest city in the country, San Francisco, along with the flow of union campaign money. Pelosi, the unionist, has received the Cesar Chavez Award from the United Farm Workers Union. But did you know that her $25 million Napa Vineyards and Winery that she and her husband Paul own is a non-union shop? You didn't know that. Pelosi has received more money from the Hotel Employees and Restaurant Employees Union than any other member of Congress in recent election cycles. The multimillionaire investors own a large stake in an exclusive resort hotel in the wine country, the Napa Valley Auberge de Soleil Resort. It has more than 250 employees, but none of the Pelosi employees are in a union, according to Peter Schweitzer, author of Do As I Say, Not As I Do, The Hypocrisy of Democrats. Pelosi is also partners in a restaurant chain called Piatti, which has 900 employees. As you may have guessed, the chain is a non-union shop. Okay? That was written by Mick Gregory in 2006. It's gotten much worse. Much, much worse. Much worse. Cronyism. It's beyond comprehension. Unbelievable how they get away with this. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. The idiots at Occupy, there's no end to them. I can give you one example after another. The more idiots at Occupy, including a guy who quit his full-time teaching job and then went to school to get a master's degree in puppeteering, came back to his school and there was no job for him because apparently there was no jobs for teaching puppetry. So he's amongst those in Oakland screaming that the society is corrupt because they won't hire puppeteers. I'll do funny things if you want me to. I'm your puppet. I'm yours to have and to hold. Darling. Pot dealers are hurrying west to make the fortune off medical marijuana. I've always told you medical marijuana is nothing but a scam. And that's, of course, what it's always been. In Florida, a commissioner has blocked the Muslim sacrifice of goats and lambs because they're saying, well, they're saying that it's a slaughter that is so sacrificially horrible, the bloodbath is so inhumane, that they have to stop doing it. Muslims from local mosques are complaining, and of course they went to the usual source to complain, which is the so-called Council on American Islamic Relations, saying that they're shocked and they're upset. And they said the animals do not suffer. Nonsense. The Florida Humane Slaughter Act governs the handling and killing of livestock. And the fact of the matter is, although the 1993 U.S. Supreme Court decision stemming from a case in Miami-Dade which upheld the right for animal sacrifice of religious purposes is operational. Well, the truth is, animal sacrifices for religious purposes enjoy protection from government interference, but it's a matter of how they're sacrificing the animals. And in this case, the Muslims are not doing a very nice job because she said the slaughtering is horrible. She said she's crying, the commissioner, when she sees it. She said sometimes slaughterhouses in the Muslim world will use a hammer to kill the animal, and it takes longer for it to die. Also in the news, according to New York City arrest records, many occupied Wall Street protesters live in great luxury. Using county assessors and online resources such as Zillow.com, they looked up the listings, and they found out that at least 95 of the protesters' residences are worth approximately $500,000 or more. And the median monthly rent for those living in apartments whose info is readily available is $1,850. Of the 984 protesters arrested, at least 797 are white. The median age of the Occupy protesters taken into custody is 27 years. So there it is. The activists are once again having a good time. Well, there are other observations. If you try to compare the Tea Party to these vermin in the Occupy movement, funded by George Soros, promoted by Axelrod and Obama, in my opinion, certainly the unions are tied into it. How do you compare the two? What does the Tea Party stand for? In a nutshell, God, guns, American oil, strong defense, spending control, no illegal immigration, less government, less taxes, less abortion. Okay? That's the Tea Party. We had results already, the 2010 elections. Don't forget them. And what does the Occupy Wall Street and the other Occupy nuts reflect? State is God, no oil, no military, no guns, even more government spending, encourage illegal immigration, bigger government, bigger taxes, more abortion, violence against Jews, bankers, business owners, and Republicans. Shall I go on? You want to go on? What's going on there? Defecating on police cars, public masturbation, smoking disgusting marijuana, selling drugs, sexual assault, fighting with the police, trashing everything they touch, walking around naked, having public sex, pimping, prostitution of underage kids, investing the donations in a bank, repeating en masse what they're told in strange organized rituals, spitting on military members, desecrating the American flag, and getting the support of Iran, North Korea, David Duke, and the Nazi and Communist parties. Not working, lying, cheating, stealing, and generally damaging all the businesses around them. There's your Occupy movement, you morons, you. Occupy rats burn, loot, and attack police. We got the pictures. You want images of the violent Occupy Oakland? You want to see who your what your children are being taught to emulate? Take a look at my website. You talk about an abuse of power? They're abusing their power. 6 weeks on the bestseller lists, Abuse of Power. You can get a free chapter on michaelsavage.com. Rahm Emanuel may be involved in the Kane sexual harassment accuser attacks. Acorn scrambles after exposed as Occupy player. Superstar Savage skyrockets, Rush flatlines. John Corzine's crash, where was the SEC when the $900 million went missing? As governor, Romney worked to reassure liberals. Mexico cartels extend U.S. reach. Greek government on brink of collapse. Tunisian women are demonstrating to protect their rights. They're afraid of the Islamists who have taken over. Thank you, Hillary Clinton. French paper firebombed after publishing a Muhammad issue. Bring more of them in. That's what we need. More Muslims in America. Rarely seen Gloria Cain to speak publicly. Cuba legalizes a sale and purchase of private property. They're geniuses. They waited for the market to collapse to tell people they can go sell their houses. Very smart, the Cubans, with business. Dying Marxist economy finally decided to go free market when there's no buyers for the Cuban real estate. Citizenship applications soar in South Florida. They're all wanting to vote for Obama. There's many a gray head in Occupy Wall Street crowd, and the graysters are asked, what do they want? They say they want the standard of living in Denmark. You hear this? Muslim pirates free an Algerian ship and hijack another. And here's one from your friends in Britain. With the rise of multiculturalism and the invasion of the third world, almost half of all Britons think children are becoming feral. That's right. Well-behaved children are being stigmatized by a tiny minority and turned into animals. Too many British adults would walk away from a mother struggling with youngsters in public. I don't blame them. They're liable to get sued. A recent survey found that almost half believe British youngsters are becoming animal-like or feral and behaving like animals. And they believe that a large majority of them over the age of 10 are beyond help. That's what happens when you bring the third world to a first world nation and you don't integrate them. That's what you get. Gangsters. Hoodies, sweatshirts, hand signals. What happened to England? It became a cesspool. A cesspool. Of children currently in the youth justice system, 60% have significant speech, language, or communication difficulties. 40% of girls and 25% of boys in custody have experienced violence at home. Well, shall I go on? You bring more of them in. I say bring more of them in from the third world. And then eventually they'll have exactly what they want, which is no nation. All right, that's it for the Savage Nation. Let's go to 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place. The focus is on Wall Street, and justifiably so. God bless them for their spontaneity. It's, you know, it's an independent people coming. It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. New York City, WOR. Denise, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I want to just say that you're absolutely correct about white liberals being the worst racist. I've called you before and couldn't tell you what I do for a living for fear of retribution. But I just want to say that what has happened in the black community can serve as a cautionary tale for America as a whole. We have lost a sense of who we are and what our traditional culture and values was about, and that's why the young lady could not countenance Cain or even think about him as being a good president. He really stands for traditional black values. When I see,
that's right.
When I see my
I got to tell you, that's as a kid who grew up in New York, I wouldn't say that I was like guess who's coming to dinner kind of guy, but the fact is that in my high school, I looked at my own yearbook. I was surprised myself. There was a Korean guy who signed the book, a black guy. I had friends really from different races, predominantly of my own background, but there were kids from other races. But Cain reminds me of them. We all got along with each other.
And I don't understand. I think we've lost. Oftentimes, good things can have unintended consequences. And when we integrated, we kind of lost a sense of who we are. And a lot of the values that Cain typifies, those were values that I was brought up with, that at one time every black child knew certain things, Michael. And when we lost that, we lost our way and just became and took on consumeristic ideals and forgot about the things that really...
Well, you're saying, in essence, you're talking about acculturation, in essence, trying to be white middle class. Isn't that what you're implying?
When take on those values of materialism without having all of the other things that go along with it, like being responsible for yourself, taking advantage of all of the opportunities.
But let's back up. Denise, are you African-American? I don't even know.
Yes, I am African-American.
All right, but I didn't know. You didn't identify as such, and I don't know. You know, the audience doesn't know that. You're alleging that I'm correct when I say that white liberals behind your back are very racist toward black people.
For me, they're openly very racist because I don't seek to join them and I don't have, you know, a leftist mentality and I'm open about that. I just want to be respected for my talent.
So because you are not a left winger as a black person, they sneer at you, they deride you?
Of course, and also because I want to compete with them openly. I'm not asking for anything except what I deserve. I don't want their approval necessarily. If you
respect do you agree with Cain? Do you agree with Cain when he says that Obama has set race relations back?
Well, of course. Of course. I mean, I think it's so telling, as a couple of other people have pointed out now, but I don't understand why black America, I do understand it, but it's hard to accept it, how black America can hail him as the first black president. He's half Kenyan. That has nothing to do with being a black
American. I agree with you. Now, see, you could say it better than me. And let's not forget, it's a disgrace to say that because his mother was white. I mean, why don't we acknowledge that it's 50-50, for example? Why must he say I'm 100% African-American when he's not?
Well, he's not. And the most important thing that Americans have to understand is what makes us American is certain values and ideals and beliefs. We don't have a common ethnic and cultural heritage like many other nations do. And our country is at risk if we don't hold on to that. And I know you talk about borders, language, and culture all the time. And that's exactly it. My community, I feel like, does not exist anymore. And it's very sad for me because I was raised in a cohesive black community. So when I see Barack Obama, that's how I know he is not anything of my community.
He's a construct of the left wing in this country. It's almost as though he was manufactured by the far left in order to seize the presidency and pillage the nation's treasury.
So you know that how hard it is. They don't really like native-born black Americans in the Ivy League schools. They prefer these, what they would call exotic or foreign-born blacks. They don't.
Why? Really why is that? I didn't know that, Denise. Why is that?
Because we have baggage, and they cannot bend and make us into whatever they want us to be.
You're saying that, let's say, an African is more desirable in Harvard than an African-American?
Because they do not have all the baggage that a descendant of slaves and sharecroppers would have. And we, I think, as a black American, you can.
So, you're actually educating me as to a mentality I didn't even know existed, to be frank. I'm a guy who thinks I know so much about culture and society. I didn't even know that, but I almost got a light bulb went off in my head when you said that.
Savage.
You know, these protesters across the country are actually forcing small business owners to shut their businesses. They're preventing the very real people they claim to be protesting for from getting to their job. And the socialist Democrats in Washington are like Bella Abzug Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Harry Reid, Barack Hussein Obama, praise these rats like they are like the Tea Party. Nonsense. Play the clip.
I think this organic movement that has cropped up all over the country.
This is healthy.
They are touching a nerve.
God bless them for their spontaneity. It's an independent people coming.
What we're seeing on the streets of New York is an expression of democracy.
We understand their frustration.
That it's about freedom of speech, the right to assemble.
We applaud their activism.
The message of the protesters is a message for establishment every place.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel.
This is freedom. This is America. This is something we ought to celebrate.
And the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration.
It's young, it's spontaneous, it's focused, and it's going to be effective.
Joining us now to talk about this on the Savage Nation is the president and chairman of Citizens United, David Bossie. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to be with you.
Well, first of all, comment on the violence and the riots and the burning and the looting and the attacks that happened in Oakland, California, and the Occupy movement in general.
Well, what's going on in Oakland? It looks like a war zone. It's an outrage. The Oakland Police Department should be shutting this down. Law-abiding citizens who live in Oakland are paying a price for anarchists, for the left, for these union thugs that are putting it on the city, and to close businesses, to threaten to close businesses, to shut businesses down, is antithetical to everything we stand for. It is, they have a right to free speech, but they don't have a right to destroy other people's lives. And that's usually where the law comes in. And so I'm going to be interested to see over the next many years how many people use this Occupy Wall Street movement as energy to go forward and promote their own anarchist views. And I think it's a dangerous precedent, and these cities better get their act together and get rid of these folks.
Well, you and I both know what the real goal of these protesters is. Why don't you explain it?
Well, look, there's a number of different groups of people within this Occupy movement. Some of them are well-meaning, folks that are hard on their luck and are angry and just want to be heard. And I understand that. I understand the theory of being the little guy against, you know, the David versus Goliath story. I understand it, and I sympathize with those people who are out of work and are frustrated. I think everybody can understand that. But then within that, there's really the hipsters, the hippies, the 1960s leftover generation, the trust fund babies, if you will, that are out there because they want to protest. And they're looking, they've hated America since the 60s. They resent America, even though they're all rich, silver spoons up, in their mouths. And then there's the real bad element. And those are the anarchists. Those are the people who come, who want to destroy, who want to fight police, who will use those innocent people that I was just talking about, even though the hipsters are morons for the most part. They're kind of useful idiots from the anarchist standpoint. So they use these people. They hide behind them, and they use them in their numbers to clash with the police, to destroy city blocks, to shut down businesses because they hate America and everything about it. And they hate capitalism, and they want a much more socialist America.
Shouldn't the 300-plus teachers, if you want to call them that, in the Oakland school system who took the day off to protest with Occupy Oakland be fired immediately?
Well, I do think look, I wonder if you are one of those 300 teachers that took the day off to go down there, were you sold a bill of goods, or are you one of those that advocates violence and took part in those acts? Because if they did, they should be fired immediately and summarily so. And the union should pay the price for that. If I was the Oakland administrator, I don't know if the mayor, I'd be looking at that contract to see exactly how I could extract deep cuts into their contracts for their actions, their illegal actions. Clashing with the police, rioting in the streets is unacceptable for any city or state employee. I don't care who you are, and I don't care what the reason is. Whether you're a cop, a fireman, a teacher, you don't have a right to do it. And they put people's lives in danger. They caused tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars worth of damage, and they need to be held accountable. It is an outrage that some of these businesses, the Men's Warehouse, Foot Locker, and others, close their businesses in solidarity with these people. These people are anti-capitalist, they're anti-business, and these businesses closed their doors in solidarity. What are they thinking? First of all, those people are not buying suits to go to work in. They're not even your clientele for the Men's Warehouse, speaking of one specific instance. I mean, these people don't work for a living for the most part. They're all out there in the streets because they're unemployed. I mean, you have certain segments, like you just mentioned, the teachers, they are employed, but it's the Men's Warehouse is their marketplace is not the anarchists. It's your average Main Street man or woman who goes to work every day. And to offend them so greatly by closing is an outrage. Foot Locker, Rite Aid, and many of these other businesses that closed, they need to be held accountable. I'm not a guy who just calls for boycott's sake. I think the companies like that. If they hate this economic system, if they hate capitalism so much, then let them taste it. Let them understand what people who don't go and spend money at your store because of your actions. Let's see how they like that.
Do you think that politicians will respond to this, or will the street vermin go home as soon as the rain comes?
Well, you know, politicians, you know, in California, first of all, in California, you have no politicians with any courage. You have, I mean, you're top to bottom across that state. The reason that it's in the financial wreck that it is in, the reason that it is near bankruptcy, that it's its unemployment rate is skyrocketing and its budgets are broken, is because it has no political courage. So they will just absolutely roll over, allow this rabble to run wild in the streets of Oakland and elsewhere, and anywhere else they pop up, and they won't do anything about it. But tomorrow, you know, you have a Tea Party group show up somewhere, and you're going to be the cops will be there to ask them for their permit. It is simply it's an outrage, and these politicians better get their act together. They're going to be these people call for people's heads. They're showing up at people's homes, whether the Bloombergs of the world, these people in New York City that are worth a lot of money, and they're showing up to their homes, endangering people's families. That you can't. This is America, and that when we start down this slippery slope, you remember what happened in France with the Muslims burning city blocks down and burning cars in the streets and rioting in the streets. This is the United States, and it should not be allowed to happen. And I don't care political correctness, which is really what this is about. This is about the left allowing political correctness to run amok because they don't want the cops to come in and do anything. And then when the cops get pelted, when they get rocks thrown at them, when they get pepper sprayed themselves, when they have when they're hit with signs and bats and batons, and they protect themselves, the anarchists, these people are using social media to take the clips of the police defending themselves, and then they're putting it out on the wire to make it look like the cops are the bad guys. Shame on them. It's going to be people like you who speak the truth, who let people understand what's at risk and what's at stake. This is very dangerous stuff, and if it is continued to allow to be allowed and fester through this winter, I think it's going to be a very very serious problems here in the United States.
Why aren't the city and state officials across the country arresting these socialist rats?
Well, it's an amazing thing. You have, I think, it was in Kentucky or Tennessee just a couple of days ago. You had police officers making arrests of these Occupy anarchists, and they would arrest them. They'd take them to jail, and then the constable, the local judge who would have to sign a warrant to keep them in jail overnight, released them because he didn't feel that one person allowed them to be released, all of them released. That night again, they're clashing with the police, getting tear gassed after having physically assaulted police officers, and the same person releases them again. We have problems in our justice system when individuals can just make judgments because they believe in the cause, because they're allowing their ideology to circumvent the law. And that is a dangerous thing, and we just can't have that.
What should conservative Republicans and Tea Partiers be doing in response? I know what I'm doing.
Well, look, I think the one thing that the Tea Party movement, the conservative movement, and conservative leaders across the country should do is absolutely educate the American people as to what type of people this Occupy movement is. Drug users in public, rapists in public. I mean, they're dealing with underage rapes right now in New York City. It is an outrage what's going on in some of these lawless tent cities that they're building up. Yeah, so you have drug use, you have sex, you have all sorts of. They're trashing the places. Let the American people decide who's right and who's wrong. Who's the Tea Party movement that is made up of Americans to make America better, that is made up of the mom and pops of the world, the people who are trying to educate their kids, sending them to school, and working for a living to build this country back to what it once was, or those that want to tear it down. And the more we do that, the more we identify these people, the more we hold them accountable, the more we educate the American people about who these people are, the better off we will be as a nation in the long term.
David Bossie, thanks for joining us today on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks for having me. Please have everyone go to citizensunited.org and find out more about us.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
This organic movement that has cropped up all over the country, that is Occupy Wall Street and has become Occupy Boston and Occupy Miami and all over the country, is really symbolic of the frustration that middle-class folks and working people feel, that that the wealthy seem to always have the wind at their backs, and at the end of the day, that they need to make sure that our economic policy is reflective of helping the middle class get ahead.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. I'm dragging. I need rock and roll. I need rock and roll today. Give me some rock and roll in the middle of the next call. Again, the same song from 1952. Futurama, the motor show. Did I tell you about my... I'll bring back a memory. All right, they want a memory for old Sav. All right, turn it off already. Here, the memory was turned on. It's just like remembrances of things past. Some people will smell chocolate and remember their past. If your name is Proust, which mine isn't. Others will remember the past if you play at the hop, which my name is Savage, so I remember. So it's early 1950s. Immigrant family. Dad was an immigrant from Russia. I'm first-generation American. I'm man-child in the promised land. You know, dead man's pants and all of that, which you all heard about and read about, right? So Dad loved cars, as I do to this day. I'm a bit of a car nut, car collector. Not a big one. In a small way. I have some pretty – I have one exotic car and some pedestrian cars, but I still love cars. I especially love the big, high-powered cars, that, especially when they go past Priuses, because the Prius drivers are the worst on the road. Offensive. Everyone who drives a Prius looks like either a Larry David while cross-dressing to me, or something along those lines, or Larry David's mother. Every one of them looks either like Larry David. If you look inside a Prius, it's either someone who looks like Larry David or Larry David's cross-dressing mother, you know, that kind of thing. Nevertheless, so I love to pass them on the road because they're nasty. They cut you off. Early 1950s, Dad and I go to the auto show in New York, the Futurama, the General Motors Futurama, right? Now, in those days, the introduction of the new line of cars was such a big deal in America. It was like the Academy Awards are to the idiots of today. I could care less about the Academy Awards, but apparently a lot of people still think about it. But like, oh, the new cars are being introduced. So they would have car shows, and people would go to them. They still do, but there's no real verve. Unless you're an immigrant from Mongolia. I mean, who really goes to a car show? You know, like if you grew up in Mongolia and you came here illegally, you go to a car show like we did because we were immigrants. You know, Buick, LeSabre, Buick, all the way up the line. Depending upon your socioeconomic level, you bought a certain car. It was amazing. They had different models of Buicks and different models of Oldsmobiles. Depending upon your economic level, you bought that car. I swear to God. Like, if your neighbor bought a Buick Roadmaster, he was as close to, I don't know, Rockefeller as you could get. Cadillac, forget about it. It was like, oh. Nobody had a Mercedes in those days. Never. Never heard of them. The only Mercedes we ever saw was like newsreel photos of Hitler's SSK. Otherwise, there were no Mercedes in America in those. Honest to God. It was true. I own a Mercedes. Great car. But in those, so it was like, you know, GM all the way, right? Then there was Ford. Then there was the third, well, General Motors, Ford. It was Chrysler. Chrysler was like for salesmen and people about to, and then there was the Nash, like the Nash Rambler. If you had like an uncle who was like a mission, like nothing to him, you know, he owned, like he sold ties, and he got a Nash Rambler, that's all. Nothing wrong with selling ties. I mean, I buy ties. So anyway, we go to the auto show at the, like the Coliseum, the New York Coliseum, right? And all the models that were on the cars were like, they looked to me like, because we were immigrants, right? We didn't have like nice clothes or anything, and I'm wearing dead man's pants. And the models, you know, they were like six, they looked like they were 6'10" goddesses, you know, who knew what they were? They're probably the same, you know, Hollywood and they got today. Girls, you know, looking to make a buck. Didn't mean they were bad. They were generally what they were. But they were so amazing. They were like in another world. Like, who are these women? No one I knew looked. None of the women in my family looked like them. Thank God, because the women in my family were all pure. And no doubt the models at the Futurama were all like Britney Spears or Paris Hilton. Who knew? So we go to the shows and we'd see the models and it was like untouchable. And why? Because the object was to make you feel just as the woman was unreachable, so was the car. But if you were lucky enough, they would sell you one. You understand how that works? Has anything really changed? Now, I don't know, every car ad has some lunatic who looks like he's an Occupy Wall Street. I don't understand it.
Savage.